Well, thank you for coming to my talk on off-grid renewable energy. Not ogres, so I'm sorry to disappoint if that's what you're expecting. So basically, in this talk, I'm hoping to cover some of my experiences with off-grid living. So over the last 20 so years, up until recently, I've lived off-grid. And basically in this talk, I just wanted to talk about, like I say, my experiences, what works, what doesn't work. Let's get started. So within the talk, I'm going to include a bit of a kind of case study of where I lived for a long time, Stewart Community Woodland, which is an intentional community on Dartmoor in Devon. I'm going to talk about the renewable energy diagram, which is a sort of method of looking at different off-grid technologies, renewable energy technologies, and how they can interact with each other. And then if we get time at the end, we can look into sort of future technologies and how we can sort of take things forward from here. I'm not going to be going too much into the sort of the practical wiring stuff. If you're into that, I hope you saw Andy Fletcher's talk yesterday. He did a good talk on off-grid solar. I don't know if that was recorded. You might be able to catch up if you didn't see it. Very good talk on different equipment required for an off-grid solar system. I'll touch on solar. I'll also touch on microhydro, wind power, and various other off-grid renewable energies. So, what's the reasons for going off-grid? Why do we want to go off-grid? Everyone might have a different reason. For me, I wanted to be in a situation where I kind of wasn't relying on grid infrastructure. But you might be living in a vehicle or a boat. You might just want to live on the land and provide for yourself. Like I say, not relying on the sort of corporate infrastructure that we often rely on for these services. Everyone's situation is different. I've lived off-grid for, nearly 20 years. I started off living off-grid at a protest site called Limmins Forest in Kent. I'm not going into too much detail about this because I haven't got much time, but that's actually our victory banner. We won that protest, which was a result. 440 acre piece of woodland. A group of us lived on there and stopped the bulldozers coming in until such time as the planning permission expired and the project that was going to go on there didn't happen. So that was my first experience of off-grid living. Although we experimented a little with solar and winds there, we didn't actually do much renewable energy stuff. We were mainly sort of just relying on batteries and things like that. But following that, after sort of campaigning against things that are negative, a group of us got together, and we decided to start focusing on what we might be able to do as a positive alternative to that. And after lots of meetings, lots of very long meetings over the course of years, we eventually got together and got together some values, did a land search, and came up with a project called Stewart Community Woodland. And this is basically an intentional community where we planned to, we planned and carried out living off-grid with all our services apart from a phone line and broadband internet, because we couldn't live without that. That started off in the year 2000. So we started off, like I say, did a land search. We had various criteria for our land search. We wanted a woodland. Dartmoor was in the criteria. South-facing slope, water on site, various different factors, and eventually came across this piece of land called Stewart Wood in Dartmoor, which had fit all of those criteria, basically. And we purchased that in the year 2000, and we moved on Earth Day 2000. We moved on in April, Earth Day 2000, and because when we first got there, there was no infrastructure at all. We were basically living in tents, and it was the wettest April on record. So it's not pleasant to start with, but eventually we started building more useful structures. We started building benders to live in. This is a picture of someone constructing a bender, which is basically just arched wooden poles with canvas tarpaulin over the top. There's one that's more complete. That's actually the one we lived in for a while. And as time went on, we kind of developed better technologies for line-packed structures and line-packed development. And eventually we had timber frame, sort of timber-clad structures. Top left there is our communal kitchen, where we... There's basically between 5 and 20 people living on the site on and off. And we had... each had our own dwellings, but we also had communal structures. And the kitchen there is one of the communal structures. The house on the bottom right is one of the dwellings. That's the inside of one of our structures, the kitchen, our kitchen. And there's a community portrait of all of us living there, probably about 2012, not sure exactly. I have to credit that photograph to David Spiro. He was a professional photographer and good friend that came to the woods multiple times and took photographs of the structures and the people within the woodland, and he produced this book called Settlements, which I'd highly recommend if you're interested. It's got lots of lovely pictures of not just our community but other low-impact communities around the country. Yeah, recommended David Spiro's book. He was old-school large format photographer. So he's like the concertina lens and the hood over the cape over the shoulders. Lovely cameras that he worked with. This is my latest structure, which was a round wood timber frame roundhouse with a reciprocal roof. We're just building there. Unfortunately, I never actually got to finish this structure. I won't have time to go into the details, but we did have to take everything down and leave the site through planning reasons eventually, so I didn't actually ever finish this structure, which was a shame. We've got fairly close though. We did the straw bale infill and the turf roof and made it comfortable to live in for a year or so before we had to take it down. And there's another shot of the inside there, a couple of shots of the inside. It was basically, when we first moved on, the simple benders that we had were not very well insulated. And as we progressed, we did more sort of well insulated and better line pack structures. It's just another shot of the turf roof there. There's an aerial photograph of the woodland. So most of the woodland, you wouldn't be able to see any of these structures unless you were in the air. This one was actually taken by helicopter. It was before drones were much of a thing, really. But you can see a few of the structures within that photograph. And there's another community portrait, which was 2014, I believe. So that's a brief history about the sort of structures that we'd have in the woodland. Obviously, the main part of the talk is more about the renewable energy that we used and experimented with. So we started off, moved on site, and we didn't have any power. So we quickly threw together a cycle generator, and that was how we updated our website for the first few months of the project. You'd have to save your work quickly if you run out of steam, because the computer was directly powered from the cycle generator. I should say maybe at this point that we kind of endorsed a very sort of, we were very low budget, we didn't have much money to spend, and we had a very DIY kind of outlook on things. So we wanted to provide these things for ourselves and experiment with reclaimed and salvaged parts to build. So for example, that cycle generator, which you might be able to see, is made from an old exercise bike. It didn't take long, didn't take much cycling before we started looking into other technologies. back in the early noughties, though, solar panels were really expensive. I remember spending £400 on an 80-watt solar panel back in the early noughties, and you can get a similar panel for about £50 now. So although we did have some solar in those early days, it was quite limited. Solar power. So for everyone's... You've all seen solar panels. Very good at converting sunlight directly into electricity. No in between. Low maintenance. Very handy. Like I say, less expensive now, but used to be expensive. And the other thing is, obviously, you can't make a solar panel at home. It's quite an industrial process to make the silicon wafers and all that kind of thing. So although it's useful, it didn't fit with our kind of DIY philosophy quite as well. So we did also experiment with other technologies. Renewable energy can be fun. We've got a solar pad bubble machine there. That's Rowan, my son there. He's 22 now. He's at the event with me here. So the solar panel there was directly connected to that bubble machine. So when the sun came out, it blew bubbles. When the sun went in, the bubbles stopped. Quite good fun. The solar chopper was good fun as well. So basically an electric bike. And although the solar panel wasn't enough to sort of run it continuously, if you left it there for a while, it'll build up a charge and you could use a solar-powered electric bike. It's quite good fun. But like I say, with the sort of DIY culture we had, we wanted to experiment with other methods of producing renewable energy. And because we lived on a fairly steep slope with a stream on it, micro-hydro was a real possibility for us. And we started looking into the possibilities. So our first micro-hydro system was it was basically an old Stuart Turner brass pump used in reverse. So we plumbed it in reverse and forced water backwards through this pump, which turned the impeller, which in turn turned the motor, which acted as a generator and produced us about 10 watts, which isn't a lot, but considering we spent £0 on it, it was quite a good return. And although 10 watts doesn't sound a lot, it's 24/7, it's running all the time, so that can trickle charge a battery, and then we've got a bit of power to update the website or turn the lights on or whatever else. Something that living off-grid also really teaches you is to conserve energy, because if you accidentally leave the lights on, you come home and you haven't got any lights, you haven't got any electricity, so you know, you've drained the batteries, that's it. So this is one of our future hydro systems. It's a bronze cast Pelton wheel. And basically the way it works is we bring water down through a large pipe. I mean, if you look at the diagram, you can see we bring water down the hill through a large pipe, and that comes out of a jet at the bottom at very high pressure. And the pressure turns the bronze cast Pelton wheel there, which looks like that when it's still. I've got the actual unit here, which obviously isn't functioning anymore, but other than the fact that I did have an LED connected to it, but it seems to have come off. But basically, the water comes down a jet, turns this round at very high speed. This is an old motor from washing machine. It's a permanent magnet motor we salvaged from an old washing machine, and that acts as a generator. And that produced us about 300 or 400 watts of power continuously, 24/7. Which, again, it doesn't sound like a huge amount for a whole community of people, but because it's running constantly, it was plenty of power for us. The only problem was that it would only run at certain times of year. In the summer, there wasn't enough water, basically. So that's our bronze cast Pelton wheel. So depending on how much water is in the stream, we can choose different sized jets to regulate the flow of water. And obviously the bigger the jet, the more water can go through and the more power we can produce. And if the stream is running a bit low on water, we can switch to a smaller jet, still produce power, but less of it. This is our latest, or the last hydro system that we had in place. It's an off-the-shelf unit. It's a Turga turbine, similar principle to the Pelton wheel. It's a high head, low flow system. So there's, I don't know if you know, but there's different types of hydro systems, and some work better with a high head and a low flow, and some work better with a high flow and a low head. So ours, obviously, because we had quite a steep hill but not much water, we were using high head, low flow systems. So is hydro power right for your situation? There's quite a simple equation to determine how much power you can get from a hydro system, and that is the power in watts is equal to the head or the height the water's coming from in meters times the flow, the amount of water you've got in liters per second, times the gravitational constant 9.8, times any inefficiencies that you might have. So basically, to simplify that, what you can do is, if you assume that the whole system has got a 50% efficiency, which they roughly have, you can just do the power is the head times the flow times 5. So for example, in our situation, we had 40 metres of head, the water was coming down from a 40 metre height. We only had 1 or 2 litres per second, so let's say 2, 40 metres, 2 litres per second, that's 80. Times 5 is 400 watts, which is roughly what we got from that system. So that's quite a useful equation if you've got a piece of land with water flowing down it to determine whether it's viable to set up a hydro system on there or not. We experimented with wind, but obviously being in a mixed conifer woodland, it didn't work very well. Unless we were to get the wind turbine right out above the top of the tree level, there was a lot of turbulence and it just didn't function very well. So we didn't really use wind power when we were in the woods. But yeah, obviously in certain situations, that's a very viable and good. If you've got the top of a hill in a windy situation, then wind is a very good and practical source of power. And then, of course, living within a woodland, our main source of power, our main source of energy, was biofuel. We were using sustainably managed timber from the woodland for all our heating and cooking. And heating and cooking is one of the things, they're two of the things that use most of the most power. I mean, a electric cooker, for example, might use a number of kilowatts, whereas a light bulb might use a number of watts. So, you know, 1,000 times the amount. But obviously, trees make a very good way of capturing solar energy and turning it into fuel for us. Where are we up to? Just a couple of other little examples, not from our site. Obviously, biofuels can be seen in the form of a steam engine. If it's run on wood, it would be a renewable source of energy, so long as that wood is sustainably managed, obviously. And although we didn't have a steam engine, there is a project in Somerset called Tinker's Bubble that had a steam-powered sawmill, which I think is a fantastic thing. You can use the offcuts from the sawmilling process to power the sawmill. Stirling engines, another technology. This is a demonstration one that I saw at a festival. Basically, they work by turning an engine just from any heat source. So obviously, you can use any kind of biofuels for that heat source. And wood gasification we did experiment with, although we didn't have huge amounts of success. This is the process of burning wood in a way that you can pull off the wood gas before it combusts and feed it into an internal combustion engine, like a converted petrol engine, and then use that to generate electricity or drive a vehicle or whatever else. We did get it running, but unfortunately the gas wasn't filtered quite well enough, and we had to turn it off before it choked the engine up. Human and animal power is a form of biofuel. We eat food which grows, and we can put energy in to do things like, or animals can, carrying things up hills. Using hand tools, to most of the time that we're living in the woods, we used hand tools to mostly we use hand tools to do felling and processing of timber. Because part of the process of living in the woodland and managing the woodland, we were converting the mixed conifer woodland into a native broadleaf woodland. This is a picture of our power tower, where we kept all of the bits and bobs responsible for our off-grid system. And I'll just talk you through this briefly. On the right-hand side there, the big red things are the Rolls lead-acid batteries. I'll talk a bit more about storage in a minute. But yeah, we used lead-acid batteries when we were there. It was quite a long time ago. It was before lithium was such a thing. Lithium batteries were such a thing. Just above those big red batteries, you can see a grey box, which is the inverter. So that converts the 12 volts from the batteries into 240 volts that you can use normal mains appliances with. To the left of that is an outback charge controller. That's responsible for taking the power from the solar panels and putting it into the batteries in a way that it looks after the batteries and doesn't overcharge them. To the left of that, you've got a little battery charger, which was plugged into our hydro system. And the green box just below that was the regulator for the hydro system. And what that would do is, if the batteries were fully charged, it would dump the electricity into the light bulbs that were just below it, because we didn't have anything else to do with it. So that's our power tower, which has got the off-grid systems in. So this is a little diagram of the sort of renewable energy system that we had at the woods, solar and hydro mainly, feeding into a battery, and then from the battery we were powering 12 volt appliances directly. Most of our lighting and computing, we converted appliances to run directly on 12 volts because it's more efficient than, so a computer, for example, a laptop computer runs on 20 volts normally, about 19 or 20 volts. So to convert your electricity from 12 volts right up to 240 volts and then back down to 20 odd volts is fairly inefficient. So if possible, if at all possible, we converted our appliances to make them run directly off 12 volts or use a converter that doesn't, you know, go all the way up and down to mains. But yeah, for mains appliances, we did have the inverter so we could run things like food processors and chainsaws. So kind of brings me on to the renewable energy diagram at this point. I'm doing the time. And a lot of the things that we've already looked through can be seen on this diagram. So most of our renewable energy obviously comes from the sun, either directly or indirectly. Like I said, a solar panel will take the energy from the sun and convert it directly into electricity, which is really convenient. Hydropower, that's kind of solar energy, but in a less direct way. The sun causes evaporation from the seas, precipitation, rain, water down the hills. We can use that for generating electricity. So indirectly, hydropower is a solar energy. Also, you'll see a little moon above that as well, because we can also get power from water by using tidal energy, tidal power. Wind power, again, with the sun heating and warming and cooling certain areas of the planet, causes wind flow, and that can be harnessed to produce energy. Obviously, as I mentioned before, biofuels, trees, oil crops, that sort of thing can be used for. And the good thing about biofuels is that you're instantly producing something that can be stored. So timber, for example, if we're growing trees and store it, we can store timber until we need it, until we're cold and we need to stick it in the wood burner and get ourselves warm. Whereas storing electricity is not so practical with battery technology. And then on the right-hand side, we've got heating. So direct solar heating. And also geothermal heating from the inside of the earth, we can produce power. And you can follow the lines through that diagram to see all the different things that we've experimented with. So for example, the solar powered chopper, if we start off with the sun and go to the photovoltaic solar panel and then go down to the battery and then go down to transport, we've got a solar powered chopper. If we go from the sun to the biofuels, the tree, and then down to the engine, and then from the engine down to the transport, we've got a steam engine. And most renewable energy technologies can be seen on this diagram as different ways of producing and using. So at the top, we've got the acquisition stage where we're harvesting the energy. Next level down, we're kind of converting it into what's useful for us. Next level down, we're storing it, maybe. And then the next level down is where we're using the appliances that we're using and need the energy for. And that's a simple diagram of a off-grid system. Basically, if you were setting up a simple off-grid solar system, that's just a simple diagram about how you might go about that. That comes to the end of the slideshow. So basically, I'll be in the Q&A tent afterwards if anyone's interested in going into questions further. I realise I haven't touched much on future technologies. I have got a few minutes left, so I will go back and talk a little bit about that sort of thing, if that's okay. So batteries, for example. Like I said before, we were using lead acid batteries, which is 150-year-old technology. Storing energy in batteries has always been a challenge, and obviously more recently we've got lithium batteries, but they come with their own problems as well. Extraction and mining of lithium has its issues. You know, it got us thinking about different ways that you might store energy. We'd love to have had in the woods a reservoir up the hill, because storing energy as water up a hill is a very viable way of storing energy, and then you can release that water through a turbine to produce the energy on demand. Unfortunately, you do need to store quite a lot of water. That's the issue with that, but it is used, and there are places in the country that do store even grid energy using that technology. Other storage methods I've looked into: the possibility of storing energy in a flywheel. If you get a very large thing spinning very fast, it stores energy, and you can input energy and extract energy by using magnetic coils. There's all sorts of interesting theories about that. But yeah, I mean, like I say, we can discuss these sorts of things more in the Q&A session afterwards if people want to join me for that. In the meantime, I'm just going to go back to the renewable energy diagram, and you can have a look through there if you want while I kind of wrap up. But yeah, thank you for coming to the talk.